Hi, and welcome to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. Each week, we talk with patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals and do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. At just 14 years old, cheerleader Nicole Schultz was convinced she had the flu. But when a blood test found that she actually had acute myeloid leukemia, or AML, her world turned upside down. Rigorous treatments that included chemotherapy, blood and platelet transfusions, and two bone marrow transplants had left their mark, leading Schultz to believe she could never have children of her own. But today, 11 years later, she's now the proud mother of a healthy baby boy after giving birth in November, and she's sharing her story. In this episode of the Cure Talks Cancer podcast, we're talking with Schultz about what it was like to live through AML, how much has changed in her life as a result of dealing with the disease at such a young age, and why she now lives her life to the fullest and hopes others will too. Hi, Nicole. Thank you for speaking with us today. Can you start off by just telling us about your cancer journey and how you came to be diagnosed?
Of course. You know, thanks for having me to share my story today. I'm really excited about it. Really, my cancer journey has been, you know, a long one so far. And looking back, you know, I was just diagnosed when I was 14 years old. And it was actually Christmas break of my freshman year in high school. So I was, you know, just getting into high school. I was really excited. I had just made the varsity cheer squad. So I thought like, woo, everything is great. I was competing in local beauty pageants and really was just getting excited about winter formal because I had a really cute date. So, you know, in my mind, you know, things couldn't possibly get any better. And then over Christmas break, I began to feel really tired and get fevers off and on and started to just get really a lot of flu-like symptoms. Then that kind of was going on for a little over a week. And I remember actually at cheer practice, we were running the bleachers and I passed out. And I really just kind of dismissed it thinking that I had low blood sugar. And so I went to the vending machine, got some Sour Patch Kids and thought, okay, I'm better. And, but then, you know, we got onto Christmas break and come Christmas morning, I was too tired to, and lethargic to even get out of bed and open Christmas presents. And for my family, that was, a very big red flag because I'm such like a, usually wake them up right in the morning, like let's open presents. And so my mom was like, you know, we need to go to the doctor. And they were closed Christmas Day. So we went the next morning to my local pediatrician's office. And he pretty much thought the same thing, you know, probably a really bad case of the flu. Go home, get plenty of rest, drink tons of fluids. And my mom, just seeing my energy level decline over the last week or so, was really more concerned. And she thought I had mono. I was a cheerleader, you know. So she was like, you know, let's do a blood test. And she really encouraged that. And he was like, all right, you know, that's fine. And so he sent us to the lab on our way out. We literally just stopped right. It was right near the exit. We stopped right there, did a quick blood test and headed home. And it was less than an hour later when he called us back and said, head directly to City of Hope. They are waiting and ready for you as an emergency admittance. We already sent your blood to a specialist and everything's ready, like go and go now. So we go to City of Hope and I was immediately hooked up to an IV and began receiving a blood transfusion. And it was like quick. My parents were taken off into like a separate room where they were speaking with doctors while I was like getting all hooked up. And so it really was just like me and the nurses for a couple minutes. And I was just sitting there like, I have no clue what's going on, but obviously something's wrong with my blood because they're giving me blood transfusions. And next thing I know, my parents come in with the doctors and, you know, have everyone sit down. That's never, in my experience now, that's never the good sign to be told to sit down. And so the next thing I know, they're telling me that I have leukemia. And that I'm going to be having a bone marrow biopsy the next morning to find out how aggressive and exactly what type. But they're like, yeah, like 99% chance you have cancer. And at that moment, I just completely, I remember how I like fell over. I just like kind of collapsed and started crying, and I just felt like my life was over. I had never met or known anybody in my life who had cancer and survived it. So for me, it's a death sentence. And so I was like devastated. And then the nurses came in, and they're still nurses at City of Hope today, and they're like my family, Georgie, Lisa, and Ginger. And they were just like, "Oh, it's 99% chance." And we're like, "Oh, so you're saying there's a chance." And they kind of just like encouraged me, like, "You can still do it. Like, you're fine." And didn't look at me like I was this sick, fragile thing. And like, so that their kind of like energy kind of bled off on me, being like, "Okay, well, all right, they're not worried, so I shouldn't be worried." And so I went into and had a bone marrow biopsy the next morning. And when those results were back, 97% of my body was leukemic cells. And the cells were only about 14 days old. So they could tell like how fast it was moving, and it was moving very fast. And I was officially diagnosed with AML. And so they told me, we immediately started chemotherapy. And they were like, "You're going to be inpatient for 6 months, receiving intense chemotherapy. We're going to try to like really knock it out." And I was just like, tried to be like, "Okay, it's only 6 months, so I can get out of here by summer. I'm going to be good. Like, I'll be able to compete for Miss Teen Narco in September." Like, I just like tried to push reality as far away as I really could. And that's how my child mind wanted to deal with it, really. And that also made, as things kind of progressed, it made it more shocking, because like I wasn't ready for it because I was in denial. And then like I remember the first time my hair like came out, it like burned, and I itched, and a huge clump came out. And then it was like traumatized all over again, because then you actually had to face that reality. And so we started the chemo, and I was actually doing really good with chemo, and I did not get super sick on it. I wasn't like puking all the time. And so that also fed into my denial, being like, because I was feeling good. I was receiving blood and platelet transfusions every day. And so I thought, "Okay, 6 months, I got this. I'm going to be fine." And about 3.5, almost 4 months into it, doctors pull us in to have another meeting and tell us to sit down. And so we have a meeting with the doctors, and they end up telling me and my family that the reason I am feeling so good is not only because I'm getting healthy people's blood and platelets, but my body had completely become immune to the chemo, and it was barely making a dent. And so that wasn't going to work. And that meant that I was actually going to need a bone marrow transplant. And at that time, after being an inpatient on the pediatric floor for almost 4 months, I had seen many bone marrow transplant patients and their experience. And I can remember so many times talking to like Tony, the child life specialist, and being like, "Oh, what I've got's bad, but thank God that's not me." Because I just believed I would never be able to do that. It was seeing what these kids were going through scared me to death. And so I said no. I was like, "I'm not doing that. I am not having a bone marrow transplant. I don't know what you're thinking." And then they told me, "If you do not have this bone marrow transplant, you will be dead within 3 weeks. Like, done. No questions about it or anything. You'd have 3 weeks." And then that kind of reality was a whole nother one to kind of accept. That was kind of like hearing it all over again. And I was devastated, because at that time, my little brother Jason, he was just 1 year old, and he was like my best bud. And so the thought of him not even remembering me, it really actually that scared me more than everything with the bone marrow transplant. And it scared me more than dying, just like him growing up and not even remembering like who I was or how special our bond was. And so that's really that was what made me decide to do it, and say, "Okay, I'll have a bone marrow transplant." And so he was my big why of saying yes. And so then I was really, really lucky that my doctors at City of Hope, the day that I was diagnosed, they saw how aggressive my cancer was, and they immediately started looking for a match for me in the bone marrow transplant registry because they kind of had a feeling that chemo was not going to do the trick. And so I was lucky enough to actually receive an unrelated bone marrow transplant. I think it was April of the next year.
As a teenager, that must have been, obviously really difficult. How did the treatment, once you got past the chemo that didn't really impact you, going through this bone marrow transplant, how did that really impact your life?
Really, my bone marrow transplant, it affected me a lot. My first bone marrow transplant was the hardest part of any of the treatments I've really gone through because this was 15 years ago and it was before targeted radiation was used. So I had to undergo full body radiation. And that is your entire body, like from head to toe, every organ in your body is irradiated. And that part, I didn't even think I was going to survive that treatment. It was excruciating. I got really bad mucositis. So like blood and mucus was just coming out of my mouth. And I lost my fingernails, my skin peeled off. I actually, like, I think it was last year, I watched the movie Chernobyl. And I was watching that. I was like, hey,
Ouch.
that happened to me. 'Cause that's, really what it was like. Everything just like, it was excruciating. And so I wanted to just give up. Like I did not even want to continue with treatments because that was so hard. But people don't have to go through that anymore. And that is so huge, and something I'm incredibly grateful for patients. And I didn't have to go through that in my second transplant. That was just even like 2.5 years after my first one. But I also went through really bad graft versus host disease. And that's, when your donor cells and your cells are fighting to kind of which one's going to win over your body. And I got so sick that I weighed less than 80 pounds and I got so weak, I couldn't even stand up and support my own body weight. So it was extremely hard.
Okay, so after all these treatments, you've been cancer-free for 11 years. Is there any kind of treatment that you're still going through or?
Yeah, so I do have some long-term side effects, and that also comes from especially like my first bone marrow transplant and like the old school treatment that I had. Really, like I have bilateral knees, I have metal knees, and I've had like 5 knee surgeries since then because the steroid treatment that I had to go through to help treat my graft versus host disease gave me a bone disease called avascular necrosis. And so my bones started deteriorating, and especially from being a cheerleader and doing tumbling, my knees were already, pretty bad. And so it really affected those joints. And I did have a lot of the chronic graft versus host disease where it lasted for years after my transplants. Instead of just being in that 100-day engraftment period, it came back with like a total vengeance about 2 years after my second bone marrow transplant. And I was incredibly lucky to be at City of Hope, where they were working on experimental immunotherapy treatments and doing a lot of research there. And with the graft versus host disease, it's an immune response. And so I was lucky enough to do photopheresis treatment there and work on my T cells. And that really got that under control. But it kind of started mimicking different autoimmune diseases like scleroderma and like fibromyalgia. Like my connective tissue and all of my joints got calcified. There was a point where I couldn't even put my hands flat together. Like I can't really exactly make a right angle yet, but like my arms don't straighten all the way. It was really bad. It's so much better now. Like at first, they thought we weren't even going to be able to make that better. They're just going to try to stop it progressing. But the T cell treatments worked incredibly, and so I was able to get a lot of range of motion back. And so that's been great. But I also have a lot of gut problems from that because I got the graft versus host disease in my stomach, colon, and intestine. And so my guts are, I always say, oh, I hate my guts. Like, there was a lot of damage that happened there. But, a lot of it has gotten so much better over the years. Like, my quality of life has gotten a lot better. I really only go in now for immunoglobulin infusions because my immune system still, it's not great. So whenever my counts drop, I go in and get an infusion, and we always monitor my blood and everything like that, which I'm incredibly grateful for because I get to kind of stay on top of my health all the time. It wasn't like a you're better, okay, goodbye. I'm a part of the Childhood Survivorship Program at City of Hope, and they have every, like, on file, every medicine I've ever received, every chemo treatment and dose, and they can be like, okay, we know that this type of chemo or this type of radiation causes this problem down the road, and we'll start preventative measures. I was also a part of their heart failure preventative studies and stuff, because a lot of those chemos cause heart failure when you're older. And so being able to kind of have those preventative measures is super important, and I think have really helped my long-term quality of life. So I've been very lucky in that area.
Yeah. Now, I mean, these treatments could have also impacted your ability to start a family, obviously. How did those conversations go with your doctors? Did you have conversations with your doctors about that? How did you even address that?
Yes. So that was actually the very first conversation. The first thing that my doctor told my mom and me about when we learned that I needed a bone marrow transplant. And it's funny, because like my mom, even to this day, she's like, it made me hate Dr. Pulaska, because that was the first thing she said. Was, you know, she's never going to have children. Right. And so like, it was a combination of the intense chemotherapy, causing infertility. And then as well as the radiation, you know, full body radiation, that means all of my organs, my uterus, ovaries, and reproductive organs, they were all irradiated as well. And so normally that makes it, you know, not work. It cooks you. Mm-hmm. And, so I was devastated, because even at 14, I knew something that I always wanted was to be a mom. And I wanted that since I was very little, and just like being able to carry your own baby and stuff. I thought I'd never experience that. And so
exactly. That's exactly the next question I was going to say. So fast forward to last year, when you gave birth to a healthy baby boy in November. Congratulations.
Yeah, 6 weeks early.
Oh, wow. How was that? How did that make you feel? I mean, to find out you were able to actually have a family after all.
Oh my gosh. So how I found out that I was pregnant was actually pretty funny for me. I had gotten COVID. And so I was, you know, quarantining at home, me and Jordan. And I started having like kind of like racing heartbeat and my heart pumping really hard. And just with all of my medical history, I was like, I really don't want to have a heart attack or get a blood clot or anything like that. So I wanted to go get checked out. And so I went to the emergency room to make sure that my heart was going to be okay. And they, you know, I was in the emergency room, hooked up to the heart monitors, and they did a blood test to make sure I wasn't going to get a clot. And they came back and he's like, we found a surprise in your blood. And I'm 100% thinking, they're going to tell me my cancer's back, because I had blood cancer. The only surprise ever in my blood has been cancer. So I was like, oh crap. And he's like, you're pregnant. And I freaked out. I was just like, what? Like the heart monitor's like beep, 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 because I just was so shocked. I was like, holy moly, wait, what? And that was just like, I just started bawling, because I was just like, I thought that would never happen. But then I was also scared, because I was like, is my body going to be able to do this? How far along am I? When did, like, all these questions just started like flooding my mind. And I was terrified of a miscarriage. I really was, because I just thought my body would never be able to do it. Yeah. And so they were like, you know, go home. The only reason your heart is beating like that is because you have so much blood in you right now. Like, you're fine. Go home. And so we did have to wait like 2 weeks until we, tested a couple times negative for COVID before I could go see my OBGYN. And I was thinking that when I went to go see him, it was going to be like a seed. It was going to be very early. There was going to be a lot of risk involved. And when I went, they did an ultrasound and he was already 14 weeks. So we already went through the first trimester without even knowing that he was there, and really got past that high risk area for miscarriage. So that was a huge relief. I couldn't believe it. And I still, to this day, I'll hold him and be like, I made you. Wait.
Like, that's great. So what kind of advice would you give others who have just received a diagnosis of their own?
You know, I've met so many patients and I have so many friends that sadly have become patients and stuff. And really, I would say, like, and it sounds kind of cheesy, but never give up and never stop fighting, because your attitude and your mindset is so important going through it. I learned so much from getting sick again. My second time I was sick, I was able to look back at the first time in my first bone marrow transplant and like all the things that made that harder for me, like being depressed, not getting out of bed, not eating because I was sad. And I had to be like, okay, I can't do that anymore because I need to fight. And if I'm going to survive, I need to kind of take this into my own hands. And you have like no control in that situation. So if you can find anything you can control, and even if it's just your attitude, I think that's huge. And being your own advocate, like you have to fight for yourself. And if there's something that your doctors aren't bringing up and talking to you about, like fertility, then you need to speak up for yourself and do that because it's your health, and you need to be able to kind of fight for yourself, even though it's really hard. Never stop fighting for it. It's
That's
worth
great.
it.
That's great. And lastly, how would you say kind of going through this has really changed your outlook on life?
It has completely changed my outlook on life and my excitement for life, how I appreciate things. And really, I don't get mad over little stuff now because it's like I understand there's not, it's not a lot, something to worry about. Like I've had bigger things to worry about. And if it's not going to really be a big deal, it's water off my back. And so it helps me to be a lot happier and really enjoy every moment.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.